King and JFK, a whitewash, a hoodwink on the USA. Martin Luther King was murdered too, another cover up to make a fool of you. Whitewash. JFK died in what we believe November 22nd, 1963, in a crossfire of bullets while the cameras rolled and the people heard the shots from the grassy knoll. Now the Warren Commission gave their lengthy report. A lone nut did it all, but he never got to court. But they couldn't cover up what we saw on TV. Now we know it's our eyes, we should have believed. No, they couldn't cover up what we saw on TV. JFK and Rodney King, you might be black. You might be poor white trash. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hello, this is Paul Kangas, coming to you from San Francisco, and this is the program Reality Sandwich. And this week, we're going to be covering the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King, because there's some new sort of garbage coming out of the press that some Memphis businessman hired the guy who shot King. Now, if you believe that, I've got a bridge I want to sell you. Wait till you find out what we've got here on the King assassination. That's what the bulk of the program is going to be today. I think you'll find it most amazing. And we're going to uncover this cover-up. We're not going to let them whitewash our brains anymore. Now, first, a page from the Hillary News. You know, if you want health care in this country, think about supporting Clinton. And her husband, too. Hillary Clinton is working night and day, 7 days a week, trying to get health care. And some of my progressive friends, my so-called politically correct friends, come to me and say, Kangas, you can't support the Clinton health care package. Why, all it's going to do is make insurance companies and lawyers rich. And I point out to them that if you look carefully at the Clinton health care plan, by the way, don't tell anybody, tell any of the rich this. Because the rich have been crying just monstrous amounts of tears. And by the way, have you ever noticed when poor people cry that the tears are this crystal clear diamonds that fall upon their hands and are never seen and never heard by most of the world? But when the rich cry, why, the rich cry huge black tears that splatter onto the front pages of our newspaper. When the rich start crying, it starts producing headlines attacking the problem. And you know what they're crying, the rich are crying about now? Just take a look at the headlines attacking Clinton. Every time Clinton tries to move forward and get health care passed, the rich start crying these huge drops of India ink that splatter all over the front pages and create the headlines. Well, I just love to see the rich cry. And you know, Bill Clinton, you're going to be loved for the enemies you made, because the poor people like what you're doing. That is, the poor people that don't read the rich man's press. You know, if you read the rich man's press and you listen to, say, what the Chronicle says, well, you're going to be just nothing but walking around with your million dollar head. And you got a nickel brain up there, because the rich are stealing your brain. If you read their press and believe their press, they're stealing your brain. They'll steal your brain. Leave nothing up there but a nickel. Don't let them steal your brain. Stop reading the Chronicle. Or if you do, tear it into shreds and scream at it and say, this is lies, this is lies, this is lies. Because most of it is. Anyhow, let me tell you what Bernie Sanders says. You know who Bernie Sanders is? He's the only independent socialist in the U.S. Congress in the United States today. Bernie Sanders supports Clinton's health care plan. Guess why? Because Clinton's health care plan is the single-payer health care plan. Shh.
don't let the lawyers and the insurance company know that if you take a close look at the Clinton health care plan, you will notice some words in there that say single payer health care. That's why Vermont and Bernie Sanders supports Clinton's plan, because under the plan, the whole state of Vermont just was allowed to opt out of the federal system that Clinton has proposed and organize their own single payer system. Under the Clinton plan, any state, Vermont, California, Oregon, Texas, can switch to the single payer system under the Clinton plan. But shh, don't tell anybody that. Because if the so-called progressives in town find out that you can get the single payer health care plan through the Clinton plan, then you have all these left-wing crazies supporting the Clinton health care plan, and you wouldn't want that. I mean, it would ruin Clinton's reputation if he got the support of some of these left-wing crazies that are going around attacking Clinton left and right, not knowing what they're talking about, but not that it matters. All right, for sex scandal of the day, check this out. Here's on the, the Examiner for 12/21. Times reporter Margaret Carlson was with the Clintons on Valentine's Day last year, which she describes in the new issue of Vanity Fair that just came out. And she said, quote, "The Clintons exchanged gifts and touched each other more in the 2 hours that I was with them than the Bushes did in all the 4 years that I watched them together." Now, if Bill is good enough for Hillary, Bill is good enough for the presidency of the United States. This sex scandal against Clinton, the sex scandal against Mao Zedong, the sex scandal against Michael Jackson, you know, it's a lot of nonsense. People that have sex are hated by people that don't like sex. So the church hates the Clintons. So whatchamacallits hate the Clintons. What's that lawyer, that former roommate, former classmate of Clinton who's creating all these lies for CNN? I don't know. Ted Turner must not be getting enough. Look here, Jane Fonda. Get on Ted Turner, and how about socking it to him once a week, twice a week, three times a week, so that he gets enough sex so that he doesn't spread these sex lies all the time. All right. That's from the gossip column. And since this is the time of year when you're allowed to make predictions about what's going to happen in 94, here's what I predict is going to happen in 94. Alabama's former governor, George Wallace, is going to file a $10 million lawsuit against Richard Nixon for Nixon arranging the shooting of former governor George Wallace in 1972. What do you say? You haven't heard about that? Well, if you listen to this program, you've heard about that. It was written up widely in the New Yorker magazine, December 1992. So check that out. Excellent article. If you would like a copy of it, by the way, send a self-addressed stamped envelope, and I'll send you a copy of it for free. My name is Paul Kangas, the host of your program, thanking you for listening, thanking you for enjoying yourself. My address is P.O. Box 422-644, San Francisco, 94142. That's P.O. Box 422-644, San Francisco, 94142. And if you send me a self-addressed stamped envelope or a donation of whatever you think is appropriate for this invaluable information on how Richard Nixon set up the shooting of George Wallace in 1972, I'll send it to you for free. And I interviewed Senator George McGovern on this subject also. You probably heard the interview on this program last month. Senator George McGovern is thinking seriously of reopening the investigation of the shooting of Wallace. And I predict in 1994 that indeed Senator George McGovern will file a lawsuit against Richard Nixon for Nixon shooting George Wallace out of the 72 race, thus preventing McGovern from becoming president of the United States in 1972. He should sue that rat Nixon. Now, this is all going to happen in February or March of 1994, I predict. And I also predict Clinton will be reelected in 1996. And my final prediction for 1994 is that Richard M. Nixon will die of cancer and a heart attack, November 22nd, 1994. So I got a few months, but the odds of him surviving past 94 are very, very low. His wife died 3 months ago, and usually the husband follows within a few months of the wife. So my ex-wife claims she has forgiven Nixon for what he's done to this country, but she won't forgive me for what I said to her last year. Well, that's the way life is. Okay, before we go on to the major topic, the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King by U.S. Army Intelligence Special Sniper Forces, Green Beret Snipers, here's a thought to ponder. On the day before President John Kennedy was killed, the U.S. Army units in Germany had a major training exercise. Their training exercise was, how would we respond if there was widespread rioting in the United States? So they had a tactical maneuver, November 21st, 1963. This was just a maneuver, folks, but the U.S. Army promptly sent one-third, a full third of all the U.S. combat troops in Germany into airplanes, up in the airplanes, and they were over the United States, circling the United States. They were over Washington, D.C. They were over New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, San Francisco, and Dallas. On November 22nd, 1963, 1 hour before President Kennedy was assassinated, one-third of the combat troops in Germany were circling the United States just in case the conspiracy was uncovered. Just in case something went wrong and Kennedy escaped the assassin's bullets. Just in case they needed to impose martial law. Just in case the American public woke up like the people of the Philippines. You know, the people of the Philippines, when Aquino was assassinated, woke up within 24 hours to what was going on. In the United States, 24 years, they still haven't woken up. So one-third of the combat troops were over the United States, preparing to put down riots if the people of the United States rioted at discovering that George Bush and Richard Nixon, the CIA, killed President Kennedy in Dallas, Texas, November 22nd, 1963. Now, those U.S. Army troops, mainly white, by the way, are amongst us still. So, people, ask your relatives who were in the Army in Germany, 1963, where exactly they were November 22nd, 1963. And if you, listening to this radio program, were a member of that U.S. Army unit that was above the United States November 22nd, 1963, and you would be interested in talking to me, please call me. My name is Paul Kangas. My number is 897-0153. I would like to interview any of you who were in the air, circling the American cities, November 22nd, 1963. It would be very interesting to see what you were told, what your duties were, why you were in the air, why you were over the United States. Did you even know you were over the United States? Where were you, November 22nd, 1963? I know out there in San Francisco, there must be 200 guys who were in the Army at the time, in that special operation, that tactical maneuver over the United States, November 22nd. This is the major area of my research right now. I want to reconstruct that moment in history. And so I need to talk to some of the actual participants so that I can recreate the facts as truthfully as possible. We are clinging as closely as we can to the truth in this program. So we're hoping some of you who participated in history will come forward. Okay, today's reading is from a newspaper the Memphis Commercial Appeal of March 21st, 1963. You are not going to believe this, but this is the truth as far as we can tell about the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King. See, the problem with Dr. Martin Luther King is that he was seen by many U.S. Army people as threatening the stability of this country. And he was organizing poor people to march on Washington, D.C. And the Army was claiming that they didn't have enough troops to put down any sort of riots in Washington, D.C. And they were worried that they might have to draw combat troops out of Vietnam in order to stop rioting in this country back in 1968 when Dr. Martin Luther King was killed and the war in Vietnam was going full bloody speed ahead. So here's what the Army said about Dr. King. And listen to what they're saying. It's very revealing what their intent is. While Army commanders chewed on the King problem, another one came to a head. The sinkhole of Vietnam had sapped the military pool of available experienced manpower. A grim group of Army generals received that secret news on February 8, 1968 in a bug-proof conference room at MacDill Air Force Base, known as a birdcage, in Tampa, Florida, headquarters of the U.S. Strike Command, responsible for the defense of the continental United States, that is, in Tampa, Florida. Two secrets in particular chilled the combat veterans. General William C. Westmoreland, commander of the U.S. forces in Vietnam, and a close West Point classmate of Yarborough's, General Yarborough's, badly needed reinforcements despite a publicly optimistic report he had given President Lyndon Johnson just a few weeks earlier that had been widespreadly publicized in the media. In other words, General Westmoreland was saying, everything's going fine, the light at the end of the tunnel, blah, 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 and Johnson was repeating the lie, the light at the end of the tunnel. Yet there weren't enough troops left in the United States to control a nationwide outbreak of protests against the bloody Vietnam War, let alone the armed revolt that many officers expected. We knew the whole country was a tinderbox. They say knew, but they think, said Ralph Stein, a Pace University law professor who in 1968 was the top Army intelligence analyst in the counterintelligence analyst bureau at the Pentagon. Where is Pace University? Once we recognized the magnitude of actual civil disobediences based on our worst possible scenarios, we didn't have enough combat-ready troops to react to widespread riots, Stein said. At one point, we even considered pulling troops out of Vietnam or withdrawing units from the several 7th Army in Europe. Upon his return from the MacDill meeting, General Yarborough told a top aide, I can't believe what sorry shape we're in. Next. But Yarborough and other intelligence officers had little time to bemoan their situation. King was busy building momentum for his poor people's march and trying to maintain a bridge between the moderate civil rights forces like the NAACP and his own Southern Christian Leadership Conference and the increasingly militant Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee of Stokely Carmichael and H. Rapp Brown. King did not have an easy task, as illustrated by a recording made February 7, 1968 by Army Security Agency buggers who had been following the King family for 75 years. U.S. Army intelligence had been tape recording, spying on, photographing the King family for 75 years. Here's what was on their tapes. By the way, nobody has subpoenaed these tapes yet. So one of our next actions is going to be to file a lawsuit to see who all is on these tapes. Army undercover agents had followed Carmichael and King to the Pitts Motel Hotel in northwest Washington, D.C., where the two activists met in Brown's room. Carmichael had recently returned from Hanoi. Brown and Carmichael argued against turning the other cheek in the upcoming Washington March. Brown said, we must stop the fascists here, right here. Carmichael, no more Uncle Tom, damn it. This is a let them dump on you, and it ain't working. You know it, and so does everybody else. Then Dr. Martin Luther King responded on this Army intelligence tape, is killing and burning in your own people's streets Your answer? Carmichael, it's time. We can't wait anymore, and the people are as tired of waiting. King, nobody is as tired of waiting as me. Carmichael, then let's shut the honkies down. They bring the army, we fight the fascists with our people. We got guns, marching for peace. Hey, you seen it? What's it got us? An hour after that exchange, army agents listened to King tell 600 people at a Vermont Avenue Baptist church, we seek to say to the nation in our campaign that if you don't straighten up, then you're writing your own obituary. End of quote. Intelligence officers and other high-ranking government officials found it hard to mesh such rhetoric with King's avowed nonviolence. In February 14th memo to President Johnson, White House aide Larry Temple called King's philosophy criminal disobedience and urged the president to publicly unmask this type of conduct for what it really is. End of quote. On February 15th at Fort Hulleberg, Maryland, Blakefield met with three of Yarborough's top aides, Herman Taylor, special assistant to the Army's top spy, Dayton Cassidy of the counterintelligence branch, and Frederick Gaston, Jr., Army Intelligence Systems Analyst Group. A still classified memo of the meeting said Blakefield wanted a systematic analysis of King's plans, manpower, and weapons we might see in the streets of Washington, D.C. on April 1968. On February 19th, King went to Miami to drum up support for the Poor People's Campaign. Armed with a new $230,000 Ford Foundation grant, he told a group of black ministers that American capitalism must be reorganized. Reverend Samuel Billy Keels of Memphis, who was in the audience later that afternoon, told King about 1,300 Memphis sanitation workers who were striking against the city for refusing to recognize their union. Keels joined Reverend Lawson and asked King to come to Memphis to support the strikers. On February 22nd, a report in King's Army Intelligence file states, indications from reliable sources are that King will be in Memphis to support Union striking the city. Okay, time for some music.
Rodney King and JFK, a whitewash, a hoodwink on the USA. Martin Luther King was murdered too. Another cover up to make a fool of you. Whitewash. JFK died in Waterloo, November 22nd, 1963, in a crossfire of bullets while the cameras rolled, and the people heard the shots from the grassy knoll. Now the Warren Commission gave their lengthy report. A lone nut did it all. They never got to court, but they couldn't cover up what we saw on TV. Now we know it's our eyes, we should have believed. No, they couldn't cover up what we saw on TV. JFK and Rodney King, you might be glad. Protested man, but the protest turned to riots in the maddening crowd. And for what happened next, no one can be proud. The police say that Rodney was to blame. If you believe that, you've been whitewashed again. You can't cover up what we saw on TV. We know it's all right, we should have believed. We know it's all right, we should have believed. When we saw JFK and Rodney King, be blessed. You might be poor white trash. Yeah.
turning in loot. Cost about 700 mil, but it don't hold a candle to loot the S&Ls. And you talk about the murder and the bodily harm, but you're still busy bragging about Desert Star. And it happened in Grenada and Panama too. Ask the widows and the orphans about the whitewash they use.
If you just tuned in, this is Paul Kangas, and this is the program Reality Sandwich, coming to you from San Francisco. And we're discussing the new secret Army intelligence files have been showing that the U.S. Army had 8 Green Beret snipers following King the day King was assassinated, and that secret U.S. Army files in the U.S. Army headquarters in the Pentagon show the Army had been bugging, following and photographing the King family for 75 years. Right now there are 6 different writers in the country writing books on this topic. So this April 1994 you should see a bunch of new books come out on this topic. Meanwhile, in order for the CIA and the Army to cover up this, they've generated this false lead in Memphis of a businessman who's coming forth and saying that he hired the guy who shot King. Another false lead. It's like down in Dallas when Michael Canfield was being successful with his book and getting the story out about how the actual assassins of John Kennedy are E. Howard Hunt, Bernard Barker, and Frank Sturgis, the CIA had the Dallas police type up some new files and release the new files indicating that the actual assassins who worked for Nixon and Bush were a couple of hobos and tramps that had been arrested, which is total hogwash. Okay, so we're back to the King thing. And here we go with the new evidence on the King assassination. By the way, I encourage people to make a tape recording of this program and send it to your friends around the country, because you will not get the truth if you listen to the regular capitalist media. The straight media is afraid to tell the truth. Their advertisers will cut them off at the knees if they tell the truth. Army intelligence will come and visit them if they tell the truth. But we at Reality Sandwich are immune from that kind of harassment. Okay, it goes on. And by the way, if you want a copy of this article, send me a self-addressed stamped envelope to Paul Kangas, P.O. Box 422644, San Francisco 94142, and I'll send you a free copy. It's important that we get the truth out before the lies keep spreading. Okay, to continue with the reading of this article. This section is entitled, this chapter's The Armed Camp. While Army intelligence scrambled to develop hard information that could be used to counter King's Washington plans, others made their own preparations for what they and many others feared would be another summer of violence. Detroit Mayor Cavan, who saw the city become a war zone in July 1967, asked the city's common council to authorize $9 million bond issue to buy machine guns, M1s, carbines, gas masks, flak vests, and 50,000 rounds of ammunition, infrared sniper scopes, tear gas guns and grenades, 50 new scout cars, 8 armored vehicles, a helicopter, a spotter plane, and a partridge in a pear tree. Wow, the mayor was really getting ready, spending the money on the right social programs, all right, arming the police and the Ku Klux Klan. So, continuing here, The mayor and the police officials in other cities, such as Los Angeles, Philadelphia, Miami, Chicago, and Newark, also began buying high-powered rifles, machine guns, armored vehicles, and tear gas grenades. In Memphis, new fire and police commissioner Frank Holloman began outfitting five new anti-sniper squads with 30-06 rifles and scopes, the civilian version of the rifle used by Army sniper teams. Well, that's interesting. Whoops, my engineer is signaling to me that time is short, so this is the last few minutes of the program. We'll continue with this analysis of the Army's role in the killing of...
Rodney King and JFK, a whitewash, a hoodwink on the USA. Martin Luther King was murdered too. Another cover-up to make a fool of you. Whitewash. Whitewash. You can't cover up what happened to Rodney King. And we know it's our eyes. You should have believed. JFK died in Waterloo, November 22nd, 1963, in a crossfire of bullets while the cameras rolled, and the people heard the shots from the grassy knoll. Now the Warren Division gave their lengthy report. A lone nut did it all. They never got to court, but they couldn't cover nothing what we saw on TV. Now we know it's our eyes. We should have believed. No, they couldn't cover nothing.
Hello, this is Paul Kangas, your host on the program Reality Sandwich, coming to you from San Francisco. This is part two of the analysis of the U.S. Army intelligence role in the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King. If you were with us last week, you heard us talking about how the Army had eight Green Beret snipers following King on the day he was assassinated, and that the Army had been spying on, photographing, and tape recording the King family, the whole family, for 75 years. Okay, we continue now with the reading out of this secret Army file that is not supposed to see the light of day, but actually it was written up in the Memphis Commercial News Appeal, and continue with it. This is part where they're talking about the armed camp phenomena. Well, big city officials were making these public moves. Some Army units secretly took matters into their own hands. In February 1968, the 113th Military Intelligence Group of Fort Sheridan, Illinois, outside Chicago, began supplying the Legion of Justice, a terrorist group, with tear gas, mace, electronic surveillance equipment, and money to harass anti-war groups, civil rights groups, and women's groups. Led by Chicago lawyer Thomas Sutton, who recruited the Chicago police intelligence officials, the Legion used wiretaps supplied by the 113th agents to break into and bug the offices of anti-war groups, civil rights groups, the Black Panther Party, and women's groups. Now, if that was going on in Chicago, do you think there's some chance that the Chicago Black Panthers might have been set up by Army intelligence? Think about that. These files that I'm reading from have never seen the light of day. It's time for a subpoena. The Fred Hampton Committee of Chicago needs to subpoena U.S. Army intelligence files. If you, a listener, are in connection with any of the groups that have an interest in uncovering the killing of Fred Hampton, please consider issuing a subpoena to get those U.S. Army intelligence files. I continue with the reading. In Baltimore, the Inspectoral Service Division of the City Police received secret funding from the 109th Military Intelligence Group of the U.S. Army to spy on area black organizers. In Washington, D.C., the Metro Police received $120,000 in 1967 to spy and $150,000 in 1968 from Army intelligence units. This is money being supplied by the U.S. Army intelligence units to local police departments to help them spy on black people in the United States. Undercover police intelligence officers met regularly with 116th Military Intelligence Group of the U.S. Army. They maintained an index card file of 21,000 suspected black and anti-war radicals. Teams of police and Army intelligence officers followed and photographed King during the prayer march in Arlington Cemetery on February 6, 1968, and his sermon the following day at Vermont Avenue Baptist Church. The officers later used the pictures they took of the march for dart practice. Remember, these files that I'm reading from are practically unknown in the United States. While these Army intelligence units secretly worked with the civilian police departments, other Army officers supplied automatic weapons and even rocket launchers to the black market, where they often ended up in the hands of militant white Ku Klux Klan and Nazis. Stolen or missing Army weapons had been sold to extremists and rioters as far back as 1940, according to U.S. Army records that are still being kept secret. You know, if we had a government in the United States, Congress would be subpoenaing these records instead of me digging this stuff up. Why is it that Paul Kangas is left to do the work of Congress? Our government is doing nothing but covering this stuff up. And individuals, the 20,000 investigators like myself that are working on these assassinations, there are 20,000 of us, have to dig this stuff up. You know, we don't have the money that Congress has to do this stuff. So I think Congress should help us a little bit. Maybe on the other hand, they shouldn't. You know, one of the lessons from the Polly Klass investigation was that the people at the grassroots level are starting to form our own government units. People's government. You know, if Polly Klass's parents had simply said, oh dear, our daughter has been kidnapped, and called the police and turned the case over to the police and waited for the police to do something, yahoo! Nothing would have ever happened. They probably still would not have found her body. But because Polly Klass's parents stood up, took charge, and started running the investigation themselves, and while the police were telling them, oh, please don't do that, please don't do that, well, let us handle this investigation. You just don't know what you're doing, you know? Well, the Polly Klass search is that the people know what they're doing. The government doesn't know what it's doing. The government is asleep. The government has been hypnotized and put to sleep. And the people are standing up. So I was bemoaning my situation, having to dig this stuff up on the Army, and now I realize that it's what we're supposed to do. We are the government. We are the government. And the Army is supposed to be protecting us. Instead, we have to investigate the Army because the Army, in fact, has been terrorizing us over the years. Back to the reading. In May of 1963, a carload of white men using Army-issued .45 caliber pistols with Army bullets shot up and firebombed farm of Hartman Turnbull, who had dared to be the first black in Holmes County, Mississippi, to register to vote in the 20th century. All right, folks, it's time we have a painting for Hartman Turnbull to commemorate this great American hero who in 1963 was the first black in that county in Mississippi to register to vote. I think I'm going to send a letter to his family down there in Holmes County. And I encourage you to write to the Turnbull family in Holmes County, Mississippi, yourself. Remember our heroes. Don't let them erase our heroes from the history books. After all, it's we the people who are winning, and it's we the winners who will write the history books. Right? Right. The pistols that these white guys had been using had been misplaced from an Alabama armory and sold to the Ku Klux Klan from Greensboro, Mississippi by an Army National Guard sergeant. An Army officer familiar with the case said the weapons were never officially recorded as lost. The Defense Supply Agency between 1958 and 1963 supplied riot shotguns, M1 rifles with bayonets, and Army radios to police and highway patrol units in Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and Georgia. But the practice was discontinued in 1964 because these weapons are, because, quote, these weapons are finding their way into the hands of undesirables or white extremists. An October 1963 Army Provost Marshal report said. Now that report is the tip of the iceberg. I continue. Many weapons turned up lost, quote, lost during training exercises in the United States and Mexico, according to a classified Justice Department file reviewed by the Memphis Commercial Appeal newspaper reporter who did this story. During a 1967 training exercise at Camp Shelby, Mississippi, involving Alabama, Mississippi, and Louisiana National Guards troops, soldiers of the 20th Special Forces Group lost, that is, quote, lost, 70 M16 rifles and assorted, uncounted for, numerous 45 pistols and tons of ammunition, a report in the files says. An undetermined number of M20 light anti-tank weapon rockets were also, quote, lost during the exercises, the report added. The Justice Department file was put together in preparation for the trial of a Major General Carl C. Turner, Provost Marshal of the Army. Turner, and the Army's top law enforcement officer, pleaded guilty in 1971 to selling firearms illegally to the Kansas City and Chicago police departments. Turner also tried in February of 1968 to secretly sell machine guns and sniper rifles and scopes to the Memphis Assistant Police Chief Lux. At a Sacramento, California conference on civil disturbances sponsored by the International Association of Chief of Police, Lux turned down the offer from Turner. The Army has always battled theft of its weapons, but now powerful tools of death were turning up in the hands of a growing number of white people fighting the government. Destiny Nears is the title of this chapter. In public appearances around the country, King continues to hammer away at the terrible, tragic, unjust war taking place in Vietnam and to drum up interest in his Poor People's Campaign march on Washington, D.C. King's rallying cry came against the backdrop of Westmoreland's request for still more troops in Vietnam and the 1968 presidential primaries. Anti-war candidate Eugene McCarthy won a startling 42% of the vote in New Hampshire's primary. Senator Robert Kennedy took the cue to get into the race, promising to end the war in Vietnam and to heal the nation. And the war was going badly. The Tet Offensive had shattered Westmoreland's forecast of impending victory. More than 40,000 soldiers had deserted in 1967. And drug use amongst Army troops in Vietnam had gotten so bad that the 135th Military Intelligence Group in Saigon inhaled and concluded in February of 1968 that we are approaching the stage, quote, where in some maneuvering battalions, whole squads are smoking marijuana and they are inhaling. That was 1968, 67. Meanwhile, the Army had finished its intelligence outlines on 124 cities with the potential for violence that summer. 124 cities. The outlines included maps with all the sensitive areas marked, landing zones, secret storage sites for riot gear and weapons, and files on all the civil rights, anti-war, and women's groups and known protesters. Details of those plans were kept secret from the civilian law enforcement agencies for fear of leaks. Still, at least the Army felt better prepared for King than the FBI did. But before Washington came, Memphis. At 11:06 on March 28th, Dr. Martin Luther King linked arms with the Reverend Ralph Abernathy, his trusted colleague in the SCLC, and Bishop Julian Smith of the Christian Methodist Episcopal Church, and led a march in support of the Memphis striking sanitation workers. The peaceful demonstration soon turned violent, leaving a 17-year-old dead, 60 injured, and 120 in police custody. Later, in his eighth floor room at the Rivermont Hotel, which was bugged by Army intelligence, King warned the Memphis black leaders that he would not participate in another march unless it was better organized. And an FBI report on Memphis violence condemned King.
Rodney King and JFK, a whitewash, a hoodwink on the USA. Martin Luther King was murdered too. Another cover up to make a fool of you. Whitewash. Whitewash. You can't cover up what happened to Rodney King. And we know it's our eyes. We should have believed. JFK died for what we believe. November 22nd, 1963, in a crossfire of bullets while the cameras rolled, and the people heard the shots from the grassy knoll. Now the Warren Commission gave their lengthy report. A lone nut did it all, but he never got to court. But they couldn't cover up what we saw on TV. Now we know it's our eyes, we should have believed. No, they couldn't cover up what we saw on TV. JFK and Rodney King. You might be black, you might be poor white trash. Yeah, yeah. No, they can't cover up what we saw on TV. We know it's our eyes, we should have believed. The verdict came in according to plan. Money set aside for the protest that ran. But the protest turned to riots in the maddening crowd. And for what happened next, no one can be proud. The police say that Rodney was to blame. If you believe that, you've been whitewashed again. You can't cover up what we saw on TV. We know it's our eyes, we should have believed. We know it's our eyes, we should have believed. When we saw JFK, Rodney King, you might be black, you might be poor white trash, yeah, yeah. Oh, they can't cover up what we saw on TV. We know it's our eyes, we should have believed.
Gordon and Luke cost about 700 mil, but it don't hold a candle to Luke and the SNLs. Can you talk about the murder? Bodily harm, but they're still busy bragging about Desert Storm. And it happened in Grenada and Panama too. Ask the widows and the orphans about the whitewash they use.
Isn't that great? That's Joe Tate and his group, his rock group, out here in California. They've got a new audio tape of seven great songs by five or six different artists out here, all the songs on the album deal with the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King, the assassination of Robert Kennedy, the assassination of John Kennedy, and the Rodney King case. And if you'd be interested, send us a self-addressed stamped envelope, and we'll tell you how you can get your hands on a copy of that audio tape. It's coming out in CD also in a month, but right now it's available in audio tape. So send us a self-addressed stamped envelope to Paul Kangas, your host, Paul Kangas, at P.O. Box 4, 22, 6-4-4. San Francisco, 94142. And grab a pencil, I'll give you that address again. It's P.O. Box 422-644. And we will send you information on how you can get your hands on that great music tape. And by the way, there's a 30-day money-back guarantee. If you don't like the tape, you send it back, and your money is cheerfully refunded. But you'll fall in love with it like I did. Anyhow, the address again is P.O. Box 422-644, San Francisco, 94142, and we'll send it right off to you. Okay, back to this special report on the King assassination, prepared by great journalist Steve Tompkins of the Memphis Commercial Appeal, and it's caused Army intelligence to go totally ape. It's called the caused the CIA and the FBI to go ape, trying to cover up that it was Army intelligence that killed Dr. Martin Luther King, not James Earl Ray. Well, I guess I didn't have to tell you that one. Everybody knows that one. But now, to continue with this article, an FBI report on the Memphis violence condemned Dr. Martin Luther King when he wasn't really responsible for it. This clearly demonstrates, the FBI report said, this clearly demonstrates that the acts of so-called nonviolent advocates by King cannot be controlled. The same thing could happen in his planned massive civil disobedience for Washington, D.C. in April 1968. We must stop him. End of quote. In Washington, the day after the march, Senator Robert Byrd, Democrat of Virginia, said, quote, the nation was given a preview of what may be in store for this city by the outrageous and despicable riot that Martin Luther King helped bring about in Memphis, end of quote. Thank you from another Democrat. King flew to Atlanta that day, but promised to return to Memphis the following week to lead another march. On March 31st, the President of the United States became a casualty of Vietnam. Johnson announced that he would not seek re-election, but instead he would be supporting Richard Nixon for the presidency. Of course, a month before this, in early March, Johnson had secretly informed Nixon that he was going to be withdrawing, and Nixon had gone and upped his campaign tremendously, and he doubled his staff and was going full speed ahead and caught everybody off guard with Nixon. People could not figure out why Nixon was running so hard after the 1st of March. And then after March 31st, when Johnson announced on April Fool's Day, April 1st, that he would not seek re-election, people knew that Nixon had been given the inside track. To continue quoting this article, on April 3rd, King returned to Memphis. Army agents from the 111th Military Intelligence Groups carefully shadowed Dr. Martin Luther King's every movements. They monitored radio traffic from a sedan crammed with electronics equipment. They photographed his every move. They tape recorded his every telephone call. Snipers zeroed in on King's head at every move. Army snipers followed King, cocking their bolt-action rifles, pointing their rifles at King, zeroing their scopes, squeezing the triggers, taking a deep breath, squeezing the trigger again, following King constantly, pointing their scoped rifles at King. 8 U.S. Army snipers continually monitored King. The 8 Green Berets, and this is a quote, the 8 Green Berets soldiers from an Operation Detachment Alpha 184 team were also in Memphis carrying out an unknown mission. Such A-teams usually contain 12 members. Why this one had only 8, we don't know. The files are being kept secret. And I continue quoting this story. On April 4th, at 6 p.m., a bullet from a 30-06 rifle equipped with a scope similar to the kind the Army was using struck King down on the balcony of the Lorraine Motel. The man whose fingerprints were found on that gun, James Earl Ray, pleaded guilty to King's murder and is serving a 99-year prison sentence on top of his previous life sentence. So King didn't lose anything, Ray didn't lose anything by serving a double sentence. Ray claimed he bought the rifle from a sporting goods store in Birmingham, but the FBI investigators say, but we now know that rifle that was left was actually supplied by money paid from Army intelligence files. On October 3rd, Attorney General Ramsey Clark, one of the big liars in the John Kennedy assassination, one of the cover-up artists, the assassination of John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, and Martin Luther King. Here we have Ramsey Clark sending a report to the White House. The predicted summer of violence that was to have begun with King's April 22nd demonstration in Washington, D.C., never happened, the report said, because we got rid of King first. Rioting had broken out in several cities as news of King's assassination spread, but there was a clear and significant decline in the number and severity of the riots and disorders this summer, Ramsey Clark said. By the way, I'd like to point out, to the credit of the black people and the white people of San Francisco had no rioting after the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King because, you may remember, those of you who were living here, at State College, the Black Student Union had formed an alliance with the Students for Democratic, SDS, Students for Democratic Society. And the Black Student Union, the Black Panther Party, and SDS formed a huge civil rights anti-war alliance. And we had black and white groups working together all during 67 and 68. And so during the riots, we linked hands and went around town and in groups of black and white college students and tried to keep people quiet. We knew this was not a race war situation. We knew the killing of King was not done by some KKK type. We knew the killing of King was done by the government of Nixon and Johnson, not by a white racist, as the media wanted us to believe. You remember earlier I talked about how when poor people cry, their tears are these crystal clear diamonds that fall upon their hands and their breasts and are not seen by most of the world. But when rich people cry, their tears are these filthy, dark, staining spots of India ink that fall upon the headlines of our front pages. And when the rich cry, they make headlines with their tears. We, the people, have to learn how to make headlines with our tears. And until we do that, the rich will control the press. We have the power to have a free press, to fight their lies, to produce our own leaflets. Leaflets are very powerful. I urge everybody listening to this who wants to know what to do, here's the 10 things every activist should be doing now in the 90s. Should be cranking out one leaflet a month. You know, you go to a print shop, you run off 1,000 copies of anything you write, and then you hand it out or sell it. You know, ask people for donations, keep yourself supported. Next, you should make tape recordings of your ideas and try and approach radio stations with them to try and get your ideas broadcast. Even more importantly, write poetry. And then from the poetry, write music with it and write songs and produce music. You know, if you look at the world now in 1994 and think about what's going on in the world, it may not realize it, but it was rock and roll that changed the history of the world. Rock and roll has infiltrated every culture in the world, every society in the world. And because rock and roll has become the language of the world, everybody speaks English worldwide. So the music made the future. And if we want to make more future, we have to make more music. Another thing to do is to form study groups, groups of 3 to 5 of your friends that are action groups that when an event happens, the 5 of you get together and write up a leaflet and go down and hand it out in the streets and protest what's going on and bring picket signs. 5 people is just the right number for a band. 5 people is just the right number for a fit in a car. five-person unit cell can be very useful for creating and providing the political leadership that any city needs. So I encourage you to form units of journalists, of investigators, of reporters, with cameras, tape recorders, and typewriters and computers, and go online nationwide on the bulletin boards and put out your ideas. Don't let the rich control our minds. If you read their newspapers, they're stealing your mind. If you watch their TV, they're stealing your mind. You have the right to make a television program. I don't know if you're aware of this or not. You have the right to make a television program. In most towns in this country, there are things called community access cable stations where any television broadcast that you want to make, you call them up, you say you'd like to make a program on XYZ, and they say, okay, here's the guidelines, make it under this guidelines, and we'll put it on the air. Isn't that a phenomenal right, privilege that you have? The right. All right, my director is telling me that time has come to an end, for this program at least. And so thank you for listening. I really appreciate you taking the time to listen to this program. I encourage you to make copies of the tape and spread it around to your friends. This has been your host, Paul Kangas, coming to you from San Francisco, P.O. Box 422-644, San Francisco, 94142. And my office phone number is 415-897-0153. The P.O. Box again is 422-644.